Hello, welcome. Pull up a chair, grab your wine. You are listening to the Close Friends podcast, where we hit record on our in real life conversations as friends, trying to have a good time, but also be adults. This week, I'm your host, Sarah, and I'm joined, as ever, by the wonderful Lucy.
Hello.
And Tara.
Hey.
And Shirley, who I've forgotten, and I need to go and get now, so short
Shirley.
Interlude. Chat among yourselves.
Are you telling Shirley. Me that you don't want a fake snake wrapped around your neck for the recording of this, Sarah?
She's going to poison you. She's going to eat you, because that was really offensive.
Mate, Shirley says she's got my back, don't worry. She also says it looks a lot better when I'm delivering these hard-hitting points when she's wrapped around my neck. Makes them a lot more,
I mean,
you know,
that is right. Poignant.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. Who has our close friend of the week? Lucy, I hear rumours it might be you.
It's me. Freshly sourced from Apple Podcasts. The title Excellent. Of this, the title of this is Top Gals, Top Chats, and it's by Kate in Leem. A wonderful close friend told me to listen to this podcast. Bracket shout out to Beggy. Shout out, Beggy. And now I'm completely hooked. It's literally like being in a room with my best mates to the point where I actually find myself replying to them as I listen. I look forward to every episode. Much love, girls. XOXO. Gossip Girl!
Yes!
Yes!
Thank you so much. We love you.
This episode, we were going to have a little chat about cancel culture and the complexities around it. When we should cancel someone, should we ever cancel someone, ego play, trolling, being afraid to say stuff online, the whole crazy world of online communication and all of, I mean, at least for you guys, I don't know about you, but I feel like we're kind of at a peak right now where the internet feels very hypersensitive. So we just thought it'd be quite good to have a conversation about it and yeah, basically share our thoughts on how we're feeling online at the moment. Tara, do you feel this? I mean, I definitely do, but do you feel this heightened sensitivity right now online?
Absolutely. I think it's a combination of people, everyone, myself included. I can really feel it being a little bit bored, a little bit frustrated, really angry at everything that's happening at the moment and just kind of taking it out. It's very difficult to have, well, we can't have impersonal conversations, can we? We can't like get angry with each other. We can't chew the fat. And that's, I think, what has really gotten to me. And I'm sure that everybody else is feeling somehow similar. So we're all on the internet bashing out on our keyboards. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, it's different for me, isn't it? Because I think everyone who's listening by now knows that I have like 4 followers compared to you both who have a few more. So I'm on a different side of it. But even at my small scale and my tiny, tiny little platform, I'm starting to feel it as well. And I think maybe I can provide an interesting perspective here because it's so new to me. This is all new territory and it must be how you both felt sort of several years ago now. But I constantly feel as though a lot of people online, probably everyone who posts for not just themselves, but for other people, are kind of treading on eggshells in different ways. And that's a good thing in a lot of ways. Keeps people in check. There's loads of different ways to look at this. And already I'm like succumbing to that pressure of being like, be careful what you say, caveat everything, listen to me. Like I'm doing it already.
Well, yeah, but we even doing this podcast, all of us are like, if you guys listening, if you could listen to us when we record our podcast, we will overthink segments. We will have to redo certain segments because we are constantly thinking, what if this could be taken this way? And I definitely feel like, I don't know about you two, but I feel like I'm almost coming through those fears now and I'm kind of owning the fact that I am an imperfect human being and I'm trying my best to be the best I can be for the most amount of people. But I'm also kind of at the point where I'm accepting like I am going to get things wrong and I'm probably going to offend people sometimes and that's kind of okay. And I feel like this is because we're all spending so much time online, like you said, Tara, it just feels like it's happening more often. But like, if we were having these kind of conversations and this amount of communication in real life, I'm sure it's always been this way. I'm sure we would always, you know, just another point in that as well. We're reaching more people with the conversations we're having online rather mm-hmm. than in real life. You talk to one person online, you talk to 10,000 people. So there's going to be more backlash, more chances and opportunities for different people to get mm-hmm. upset or disagree with what you're saying. So, yeah.
Yeah. You also know a lot less about those people and they know a lot less about you than anybody you would be having a one-to-one personal conversation with outside yeah. of the online sphere. But Lucy, can you explain what cancel culture means? Because you had to properly give me a description of this a few minutes ago. So just for anybody listening that doesn't 100% know.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is obviously just my articulation of it. But to me, cancel culture is the culture in which we deplatform someone for something they have said or something they have done. And it usually happens to people who are celebrities, they have an audience. You wouldn't cancel your mum. It's something that would happen to someone who has a big reach. And it's kind of like that mob mentality of, right, this person has messed up, so let's send the online mob over. Let's all tell them what they've done and how wrong they are and how we disagree. And then we discard them and they are no longer someone to follow, no longer someone to be associated with. And that's what happens. But kind of what I was saying earlier is like, it could be something so trivial or it could be something like being homophobic. So cancel culture at the moment, I think this is where the problem lies, is it could be something which is really worth deplatforming someone for.
Yeah.
But what we're also seeing now is people traipsing through people's tweets from 15 years ago mm-hmm. and then maybe using, you know, a mildly offensive word or whatever and kind of being criticized for that. And there's so much complexities around that because in some cases, again, yes, it is still relevant and yes, it is still worthy to, you know, criticize someone for, but at the same time, I feel like at the moment we are just trying to, the goal is to just cancel as many people as possible because we're all bored and we also kind of want to feel a little bit better about ourselves as well. I don't know, it's kind of shooting other people down. It's like that thrill of I'm a better person than you. I don't know,
there's loads of different ways to cut this. I think one is that cancel culture, what I want to really relay here is the kind of instantaneous nature of it. So although people have been being cancelled by the media without it being labelled that for years, but we're getting cancel culture is a little bit different in the way it exists now because it's about that kind of instantaneous flip a switch. So one tweet can entirely ruin your life and it can change overnight. And this is the case we're talking about. So there's this incredible book that lots of people who are thinking about this space talk about, which is So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. I've actually got it in my hand. But it's about, you know, exploring the idea of cancel culture and online behaviours in this way as a sort of, what's the word, resurrection of like 18th century public shamings as a punishment for a crime.
Yes.
And it's the same idea of, you know, the public become a bit of a jury and they get to decide as a mob, as you said, Lucy, kind of what the punishment is. And that's, I think, to kind of split this into a few categories that I see emerge, that can happen for one of three reasons. So the first one is someone was a dick. Okay, and I think we can all agree, for example, J.K. Rowling was obviously cancelled, I think, in 2020. Was it 2020 or 2019? I can't remember.
2020.
I think it was last year.
She was a dick. She made some stupid anti-trans comments online and she got herself cancelled, okay?
It goes further than that. She never admitted that she was wrong. She stood by it and said, hey, excuse me, I'm, you know, those comments weren't anti-trans. They were just me saying what I think kind of thing. And what I'm saying is I kind of feel like she deserved to be cancelled,
yeah,
to be honest.
Completely
I know
agree.
We're going to talk about cancelling as a bad thing, but I do actually think that she should have been cancelled. Yeah, anyway, continue. Sorry, Sarah.
The second category is a little bit more nuanced. So this is where you get to the complicated, messy nature of cancel culture, which is people who have a platform trying to get a message across and failing, or at least trying to have some sort of impact and failing, you know. So for example, saying the wrong thing, or I would associate that example you just gave, Lucy, about, you know, people who in the past felt one way or tweeted one thing, and now they're not, you know, they're not that person anymore, whether you believe people can change or not, whatever, their views have changed, and they're getting cancelled for something that is no longer relevant to them. And then the third one that I really want to talk about next is not trying at all. And these people are actually kind of immune from cancellation. And these are the people that we've spoken about before who have got mass platforms, but they're not even trying. So my question to both of you is, if you have a platform, do you have a duty to speak up on, you know, a number of issues that affect you or people close to you, or even broader than that, the entire world?
I feel like no one owes anything fundamentally with their online presence. And I'm talking from experience as someone who every other week it's like, can you speak on this? And actually, I'm not the best person to speak on certain things. And it's actually harmful if I try and wade in to be like, here's my opinion on this. I actually don't know that much about, but I'm going to share my opinion anyway, because that's what I'm supposed to do because I have an audience. But it is more nuanced, because I do still feel like if you have a platform, as much as do whatever the fuck you want with it, genuinely, it's down to you. I do feel like people who share more of their political views, people who stand up against things, people who are more vocal about what they think, they are usually the first ones to get dragged down, because people think if you start talking on women's rights, for example, or you start speaking up for a certain cause, people that disagree with that see you as putting yourself on a pedestal. So the second you do something or fuck up or make a mistake, they want to drag you off it. And I think to a lot of people, that's actually quite scary. And it makes people hold back from saying anything at all. So I think no one owes the internet anything. However, I do think, and I think Jameela Jamil said this, if you put everyone in a room, all your favorite influencers, and everyone had to share their political views, their thoughts on every single cause and issue that meant something to you, your favorite influencers would not be your favorite influencers. It's just because a lot of people that have very large platforms, they kind of tend to do well because they don't really speak that much on certain things. They, you know, people say it all the time, I don't talk politics, we don't do, you know, it's bad for business. And you'll see that. And then it's like, well, you just assume that that person has the same moral values as you, and you think they're a great person, blah, blah, blah. But actually, they might be quite different to what you think.
You should actually assume the opposite, really, because anybody that's not talking about something is, it's because they don't want to, because they either don't know enough. And if they don't know about enough, I'm sorry, but that's no longer an excuse. Like, if they don't know, they don't care. Like, it's as simple as that. Especially someone with a platform who has access to the internet. Like, I'm sorry, but you just don't give a fuck. Okay, cool, whatever. And I think that actually everybody listening to this probably aren't the kind of people that follow, like, absolute knobheads on...
Of course.
I don't know. I mean...
Who knows? Like, I don't know.
And I completely agree with you, Tara. It's not an excuse anymore. And do you know what? The first thing I thought, Lucy, when you said, people still say, like, I don't talk politics. And to an extent, to be honest, I mean, I try not to. But the first thing I thought about that was, you don't talk politics until it affects you. So these people are hella quiet until all of a sudden, you know, rarely does it happen given the position they're in. But all of a sudden something comes along that actually affects them or one of their close friends or their family. And then all of a sudden they're political as hell.
Mm. Yeah. We're kind of all a bit guilty of that though, aren't we?
I'm just saying.
To a certain extent.
Definitely.
But then, you know, nobody can talk about everything. Yeah. And that's why there are different personalities that we can, you know, look up to. And there are different people. Also, no one can be an expert on anything. And I think we also have to normalize people talking about stuff they're not 100% on.
Yes.
Because I find it very difficult, like, personally to, you know, I know a lot about women's rights and what's happening kind of in our gender sphere, but, you know, sometimes I kind of want to talk about what's happening outside of that. Like, there have been times where I kind of want to talk about some racist things that are happening or something like that, but I always feel really scared because whilst I know a little bit, I'm just really scared someone's going to come at me for saying something wrong or not knowing everything about it. And that sucks because I don't want men to feel like that when talking about women, for example. And it's a very fine line, isn't it? But then,
look, next philosophical question of this discussion is, do influencers have a duty, given their platform, to disseminate only truth? So fake news, bringing fake news into this. If you are putting things on your story or you're posting about things, do you have a duty to 100% fact check them and, you know, make sure that to those potentially millions of people you're putting that message out there to, it needs to be well researched?
I think to that, Sarah, it's like, what is an influencer? An influencer these days could be someone who has started doing slime videos and has built 1 million followers. Or it could be someone who has been a great activist and been, you know, fucking leading some amazing movements for women, for example. So I think that the term influencer is so broad now, you can't put that responsibility on everyone. I would actually say the responsibility has to be with us, right? Because we're never going to be in a position where all influencers are taking responsibility, or all influencers even have the tools to take responsibility, because children can have platforms these days, or people who just haven't, because of the way they've grown up, or their socioeconomic background or whatever, their life experiences, they literally don't really have the tools to know everything about a certain topic. Yeah. So I think we almost have to take responsibility as the viewer as well.
Is it our fault as consumers that we put people on pedestals that don't necessarily deserve to or shouldn't be? I mean, you know, influencers are just normal people. So are celebrities. You know, activists is a little bit different. They're like Uber people, but they're still just normal people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like a lot of it, unfortunately, is kind of human nature. And we all get a little bit of satisfaction when people who are, you know, visibly successful or doing well get torn down a bit, get taken down a few notches. It feels so validating. I've definitely been involved in that. Like I've experienced that. I've had to check myself a few times and be like, why are you enjoying this so much? Like,
me too. Massively.
But you know what, Sarah, when you feel that thrill, because obviously everyone has, you'd be lying if you said you haven't. I've definitely felt that. But when you think, okay, at the times where I've got a thrill from someone being dragged or cancelled, whatever the fuck that means, are they the times where I am thriving, living my life, relationships flourishing, like, you know, our business thriving? Are they the times? No. Yeah. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're the times where I feel depressed, work's not going well, I've fucked up, someone's broken up with me, blah, blah, blah. Like, those are the times where you revel in someone else's misfortune. Yeah.
And it's also only ever the people that I should have just unfollowed in the first place anyway. Like, I shouldn't have waited for them for some shit to go down with them. I should have just muted or blocked them or whatever in the first place, because none of what they're saying or doing brings me satisfaction, even though they're, you know, they're right or what they're talking about important. Great stuff, whatever. Like,
why do we do that? Why do we like to follow people we don't like? And I had this yesterday. Bear in mind, I'm very conscious of this concept, so I only follow people that I vibe with. But there was someone yesterday whose content, nothing wrong with their content, but he would just make me cringe a little bit with the way he'd say things or words he'd use. And I ended up scrolling through his feed and I'm like, I just saw a story that made me cringe. I've now gone to his profile. I'm now looking to be annoyed and triggered by this man who is a perfectly nice man, has a great audience, is doing great things, but I just find him a little bit cringe. Why am I seeking to get annoyed by it? And I had to just, I caught myself and I was like, I just need to unfollow him. I just need to unfollow him.
My mum, legend Rena, I went on this. So there's this horrible man called Jordan Peterson. And I went on his profile to look at something for some reason. And I realized that my mum follows him.
Oh.
I was like, Mum, why the fuck do you follow Jordan Peterson? And she was like, it's for my own learning. Like, I want to know what shit he's chatting. Because if somebody at my dinner table at some point comes out with some sort of Jordan Peterson thing, I know exactly what he's saying. I know exactly what my rebuttal is. And like, I'm in the conversation. I was like, you must be so strong,
so resilient
to be able to do that kind of stuff. Because no thanks.
Do you know what though, guys? Like, at the same time, because I don't feel like any, it's not like one person is totally flawed in every single aspect. I mean, sometimes that happens, but a lot of people, like, you know, 80% you'll disagree with, but there might be a 20% where you're like, oh, actually, I do agree with some things. And I think sometimes we can be too far in our own thoughts of this is what I think, these are my views, that we don't even give ourselves a chance to understand the opposing side. And my friend Lauren, shout out Lauren Slater, she does this too, and she follows fitness people. I think she probably follows Jordan Peterson, or she'll scroll Piers Morgan's Instagram, just so she knows and understands what other people think and say. Yeah. And I actually think that's quite healthy, because because even if you still disagree with them, it just reaffirms what you think still.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like, we get caught up in our own little echo chambers where everyone agrees with us, and it's actually not healthy. But I think there is a place for unfollowing the toxic people that don't make you, like, when you read your content, that content, if it really makes you feel angry and like horrible, then it's just not worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, you should. I agree.
But there's also this, so taking that one step further, so say you're still following someone that maybe most of the content does resonate with you or whatever, but there's this whole idea of like, not just calling people out, you know, if someone puts a foot wrong and you're calling them out, okay, that's one thing, but kind of trying to change people. So this is, you know, the DMs, the messages, the articles about how people have behaved, but kind of being like, you know, I don't think you should use this word because of these reasons, and I don't think you should do XYZ because of this, and I don't think you should have said this that way because of whatever. That's really interesting, because that's like, you could have just unfollowed that person, but instead you kind of wanted to change or influence their behavior and like make it known that you were calling them out. And what do you think of that?
I think there is a place for it, it's in the delivery.
Yeah.
Because I really want to learn from people. I'm very welcome to, like, you know, people saying, oh, you know, I really, like, I vibe with what you said, but I think you should maybe look at this kind of point side, or actually maybe when you use that word, consider using a different word because of this, something like that. That kind of delivery I'm so happy with, and I love it when people do that. But it's the comments that are like, this is so not inclusive, just that.
No solution provided, no direction,
But then I say this, sorry, I'm gonna just quickly need to get this off my chest almost, but you know, I'm saying this all the while thinking that when the conversation was happening around, you know, around Sarah Everard and, like, you know, men saying how can we help and whatever, and them saying something slightly wrong, all these women are just like, they're really angry, and they're like, oh, it's not like that, or like, you know, comments are very kind of to the point, punchy. Like, you know, sometimes there are marginalized groups that just can't be fucked to be nice to you because you haven't included them or of something. Course, so I do kind of get, it's intricate though.
It's so difficult. I fully agree with you there, Tara, as well. Because sometimes I mean, it doesn't happen that often, but if I do get an angry DM or whatever, I always, in anything in life, I always try not to take anything personally. That's just something I do. So when I see that, I'm like, okay, let me try and understand what this person is thinking. Sometimes people are rude and they just want to point the finger and say, I am a better person than you. And they get thrills off that. But other times there are people who genuinely are like, you know, I want to create a bit of change. I'm going to chat with this influencer and I'm going to say that word is offensive because of this, and try and educate. Again, that we need that too. Like you say, Tara, it is in the delivery. I do think there needs to be room for people to take criticism or listen to people's feedback and maybe still have the choice to disagree. For example, I did a, just this thing that's top of my mind right now, but I did a post on Knobs Guides and someone messaged me and said, I did a post where it was like good form, bad form, and I did a little tick and a cross. Now, I would never do that with food ever. I've never put things in camps. And she was kind of saying, you know, do you think that you should use the chicken across icons when you're talking about form? Because even the bad, or the bad form, is still movement, and it's not dangerous. It's just different to what was intended. And I'd already thought, I mean, I had this conversation with a friend again last year, and I took that feedback, and I still chose, within that context, I still think that's okay. And I just explained to her, you know what, I understand and I fully agree with you. However, I think within this context, within exercise, within coaching how to do one certain exercise, I think it's okay. But I said to her, I might change my mind next year. I might change my mind at another point in time. And I think that's what we need to remember. We have autonomy over our thoughts. I think we should listen to different people, especially if it's from a marginalized group, especially. But I think when it comes to more trivial things, like something, the way you've done something, or advice on a certain topic that maybe you don't resonate as much with, you still have control over what you think. You don't always have to blindly follow, oh, someone said this was bad, so I now need to make sure I don't do that. Have a little bit of critical thinking.
We need to normalize changing our minds and other people changing their minds, and it not be such a massive deal and it be like, okay.
That's where progress comes from. It comes from humans continually re-educating themselves. And no one's born knowing everything. Absolutely. And if they are, they're privileged as fuck. Like this doesn't work like that. Like, you have to keep going through life, evolving and bettering yourself every single day. And that brings it back to that point of, like, you know, your past life. We're the first generation to grow up with an online digital footprint since being children, right? And this is going to come, and this is going to get us when we're older. Anyone who at the moment thinks, you know, like, oh, well, I don't tend to put that online. Like, how would you feel if your WhatsApps were leaked? How would you feel if your Facebook conversations from when you were 13 years old were leaked and you got cancelled because of that? Like, none of us are safe from this. And it's only a matter of time before we start to see these cases become more and more prevalent because of the generation we've grown up in. Now, my question is, what's the answer? Because we're not in a society where we can stop this from happening. We're in a society where we need to normalize it. As you say, Tara, we need to normalize people changing their minds. We need to normalize people having different personas depending on what platform they're on. We need to normalize the fact that people will get it wrong and mistakes are okay, provided you've got good intent and you're fucking trying.
My actual opinion, and this is just my opinion on this, is that cancelling people is taking it too far, because it's not giving them a chance for redemption. And everyone should be given a chance to learn and to progress in their thinking and their ways. But I do feel that it is good that as the general public, we can now hold people accountable for their shitty actions. We have the power.
But I think if someone has done something illegal and horrifically wrong, homophobic, racist, it shouldn't even be called cancel culture. It should just be like, okay, we are removing your platform. Done.
It's a crime.
It shouldn't be like, we're cancelling you. It's like, you've literally done something illegal. You have done something homophobic. You have done something racist. We are removing, and that's it. It doesn't need to be a thing of like, oh, we're cancelling you. Because that's when the lines get blurry, and it's like, oh, we're going to cancel someone for this, but then we're also going to have the exact same response and throw the exact same online mob at someone else who maybe just made a mistake. And, you know, that's the problem.
The thing with the David Dobrik case is, it's a good example because he's someone who had literally built his whole life around having an online platform. And then that platform, by taking that platform away through cancelling him, you obviously have a massive impact on his life. But at the same time, you know, what was happening and the particular crime that's involved in this is a very different topic. And that's something that we can explore another time, I think. And I want to bring this back to speaking specifically about online behaviour. And another aspect of that is the trolling side of things. So I want to ask you both, has anyone ever experienced trolling?
Yeah. I think the more it happens, the more immune I am to it.
It's mostly TikTok, although there's some on Instagram, but it seems to be mostly on your poll videos, which is just a clear sign of there's this divide in, you know, it's a topic that's very polarizing. There's a massive divide in viewpoints, and it's rife for trolling because of that. And it's like, it's almost inevitable. Like, yeah. Now, Tara, when you post videos and things, it's almost like you kind of expect it a bit. Like, that's the state of affairs. I just want everyone to understand the scale of it. It's like, you put something out there that you're really proud of. And I'm the same, because I've posted a couple of videos on TikTok, and I expect it. I'm waiting ready, and I'm monitoring. I post something and I have the anxiety, definitely for the first 3 days afterwards, where I'm constantly looking at it, being like, right, if there's a hate comment, I need to deal with it. I need to either take it down or handle it in some other way. And like, that anxiety is crippling. And that's me. Lucy, I mean, what's your experience? You've got a bloody hella platform over there.
I don't really get trolled for things like, because my content is largely like, you know, food pictures, I don't really get trolls. When I do get them, it'll usually be when I've shared a photo of myself or I've done a story or whatever. I wouldn't necessarily call them troll comments either. It's more just like people saying they dislike me or think I should have done something differently in a kind of a ruder way. And I think there's always space to take things on board, yes, but I think I've become quite good at knowing when someone has made an assumption about me. They see me and they think, especially, I don't want to go too much into this. In fact, I probably want to go into this at a different point, but because of the space I'm in, being in a thin body, trying to do the work that I'm doing, people will look at my profile and just be like, I'm not going to listen to her, because all she's doing is just telling people you can eat what you want, but she's thin, so she doesn't understand. And I think I fully get why people might find that triggering or feel like it doesn't make sense. But like, what's my alternative? Am I going to plug diet culture just because I'm thin? I fundamentally believe in everything I do, and I happen to be in the body I'm in, and I get that, and I fully understand my privilege. But that's usually where my negative comments will come from. And 80% of the time, I understand it. So actually, I kind of just let people dislike me. And I think, you know what? Everyone's working through their own shit. Do your thing. And very rarely now do I block people. Very rarely do I, sometimes I respond, sometimes I don't respond, because I know that someone has made their mind up about me. And actually, me responding, then having a long discussion about the way I am or how I look or things I've said is not productive for either party. So most of the time, I don't respond to it. If it's someone who I know wants to have an actual discussion and I get the vibe that they want to have a well-balanced conversation, yes. But if I know it's led by maybe their own emotions or their assumption about who I am, what I do, whatever, I generally do just kind of let it lie.
Alex Light said something amazing about this on her story. I think it was literally yesterday. But she said that she had somebody comment saying, I'm unfollowing you because there's no universe in which you're fat, right? And she was like, influencers who are trying to battle diet culture and who are trying to normalize different bodies, they're not only to be listened to because they are fat. And if you think that you can only listen to somebody in a bigger body or the same body as you talk about that kind of message, that's because you are comparing yourself to them and you've got this mentality of like, they're making me feel better because they look like me or because they're bigger than me or something, and that kind of makes you feel good. And that's kind of not the point. It's almost as if you're trying to go even further than that and say, we're all, you know, we shouldn't be thinking like this. You're trying to dismantle that thinking. Mm. So anybody that's kind of doing that to you, like I can see where they're coming from, but I feel like their hate is so misplaced, because actually you're trying to completely disseminate the foundation by which they feel like that in the first place.
I do definitely understand that, and I do agree with everything you've just said, but I also have empathy for the fact that when you're letting go of diet culture or have body image shit, it's very much like a stage by stage process. And stage one is normally avoid accounts that are a little bit triggering or people who doesn't entirely relate to you. Then eventually you have that understanding of like of being able to listen to different voices of anybody and understand it doesn't actually fucking matter who's saying it. But yeah,
like I'm so open about still being on that journey. Like I still get triggered by people posting what I view personally as a perfect body and then them saying something that's like, I don't know, silly things like, oh, I've put on weight recently or whatever it is. That's because I acknowledge I'm still in mm-hmm. diet culture. I can't help it. It's years to come out of that shit.
Yeah.
But what does that mean in terms of the online behavior? It doesn't mean that I troll these people. What it means is I check myself and I say, Sarah, you've still got work to do. Why do you feel that way? You know, dive into it a bit. But I don't troll people. Now, when we talk about true trolling, that's when you've got these comments that are like, not even looking for a constructive discussion. It's just shitposting. It's just damaging, weird shitposting. And what you see, because we see a lot more of this on TikTok, and that's because TikTok's still an open platform where you get a lot of inbound. So you get a lot more people who don't know you following your content rather than on Instagram, where it's actually very closed. It's about closed communities now. But you get these people who see your stuff and they just want to say how they think, or they want to be noticed. And I think this is very related to the people who are in this kind of new trend of trolling, which is, I'm unfollowing you. And I'm seeing a lot of influencers posting about people who message them specifically to say, I'm unfollowing you. And for me, looking at this with a slightly psychological analysis eye, I think it all comes down to attention. It all comes down to attention. And the really interesting thing about this sort of trolling in particular, which is purely like not constructive, it's purely just to get noticed, is when you go onto these profiles, they're either private or they've got no presence at all. So these people are thriving on anonymity, okay? They're not willing to put a face and a name to this opinion they have, but they're thriving off that attention, that thrill they get when they post these controversial things. You would not behave like that in real life, so why the fuck are you doing it online? What's that about?
Because you can.
I find it all so interesting. All of that I find very interesting.
It's freeing, but it's freeing at the expense of someone else's life, and it's not okay.
Do you know what I sometimes think, though? I sometimes think all of this is existing, and I'm holding my phone up, guys. All of this is existing within this little rectangle within the palm of my hand. And if I turn it off and put it on the floor like I am right now, I can't see or hear or access any of it. I'm in my bedroom on Zoom with a microphone and Stan and a glass of fucking hard seltzer chatting to my friends. And at what point do we draw that line of, does this even exist? Does it exist?
Is it
because
even
my
real?
Reality... Is it even real? Because my reality is I wake up in the morning in my flat and I have my breakfast and I maybe chat to you guys. I'm, you know, living my day. Everything is just existing primarily within my social media apps. So what happens if, what if you deleted it? Would it exist? No. If you had no social media platforms, it wouldn't fucking exist.
Yep. And if anybody that gets trolled just doesn't react and doesn't care about said trolling, like actually that person will put their phone down and be so angry inside because that anger is being, you know, tapped out on their keyboard towards you. Like, you know, when really we can put the phone down and like life goes on, and they kind of can't because they're angry people and it reflects much more about them than it does about anything that anybody else is doing.
It's true.
And I think anyone that has had that tendency, and I'm saying this, you know, when I can relate to the trolling, thriving off trolling, because we said this earlier, girls, like when I was at school, we'd gossip and shit and we love gossiping about other people. So I think that's just, trolling is an extension of that mentality because you're at school, you're comparing, it's a competition, you want to be attractive, you're insecure, and that is just a translation.
Aren't we all embarrassed about the amount of bitching that we did then? Like, isn't it just like when you think back, it's embarrassing, isn't it? Because we're just not those people anymore. So it just baffles me that these people are still like it literally in like 10th grade.
I'm so proud though that all my girl groups, like you guys, my uni girl, like there is no chat about anyone else. And I'm proud that I'm there. So I can't relate as much, but I do think trolling is just an extension of that. And that's why I don't see trolling as this like weird, crazy, psychologically unhinged thing. I just think it's a bunch of people who feel pretty shit about themselves and they're just trying to catch that thrill. So you're right, Tara, if you respond, if you give the attention, that's something I've learned. Not only does that drain my energy, it drains them from the thrill.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't give them the thrill, basically. So it's hard, and like I am kind of saying, if you experience trolling or judgment or whatever in any form, if you can starve them of that attention, mm-hmm. that interaction, I think that's the best thing you could do.
Absolutely.
I think you're right.
That's why the restrict function on Instagram is the best thing to ever exist ever, because they will comment stuff and no one will see it.
Yeah.
So they can just comment and like whatever, say whatever they want. And I've got this one guy that I've restricted who's hilarious because he's like the sort of troll that's like, fuck you, bitch, die.
Yes, right? That sort of troll.
And he's just on restrict. But it's hilarious because I feel like I've got all the power because he thinks I'm seeing it, but I'm not fucking seeing it. It's hilarious.
That's brilliant.
It's great. Then that's because it comes up as he has commented, but there's comments restricted.
I think, like, generally speaking, though, that's a really good example of where, you know, a technology company, I'm guessing that's Instagram, has done some research into what's going wrong here and has provided a constructive solution for that. It's realized that the problem isn't in running an AI algorithm that can look for the word fuck or bitch and removing that. Even though that happens, that's extremely problematic in a lot of other ways. But it's realized that in this particular scenario for trolling, that's not the answer. And the answer is actually to look a lot deeper and understand human nature a little bit more, and then therefore cut off that connection to the attention tab. And I think what I'm getting from all of this is that we're entering this, even though we've been familiar with the internet for, you know, a couple of decades now, we are entering this time that is still very new, very fresh, and it needs a set of acceptable behaviors and frameworks and practices for how we behave. We have those in real life. Like, I wouldn't go up to you, Tara, in real life. I didn't know you and say, fuck you, bitch, die. Okay. But online, we still haven't really got there. And I think hopefully there's going to be amazing people, activists, you know, hopefully us to an extent and all the close friends listening who can help to shape this movement and make the online world a very safe and happy place to operate. Because right now it's not. Yeah. Right now I'd say it's a 50-50 balance for the amazing, you know, opportunities you can get on one side, financial and social. But on the other side, you have to put up with so much shit. And I'm not talking from experience here. I'm talking from, you know, knowing all of you and everything I've seen and observed. But I, you know, I'm conscious as well that this is all we have time for today.
I mean, my big takeaway is, two parts: check yourself and look after yourself. Just make sure that everything that you are doing yourself is right. And even, you know, your thoughts are kind of like just kind of what we've done just now. And you're probably listening to this thinking about all the things that, you know, you think and you say and stuff, which is what I've done in the last 40 minutes. But also look after yourself in the way that, you know, if you've got anything out online, just make sure that you do restrict people and you do block people and you do unfollow the people you do not want to follow, instead of this weird canceling thing we've got going on. And just make sure you're all right, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, summarized it perfectly, to be honest, Tara. I think just not making assumptions of other people or other people's intentions is a really good place to start, and asking questions instead. You know, asking questions and also just asking questions to yourself. I love it when I have reacted to something and I question myself and I'm like, that is because I feel this way about me. And it's a mirror. And I think that, and what a great tool to use to identify your sticking points or issues that you're having with yourself. And then, you know, now, okay, that's an issue. Let me work on that. And then you build and grow. And so use those opportunities as a learning experience, as they say.
Hashtag learning experience.
Hashtag learning experience.
Mm. Love it, both of you. Thank you. It's been a bit of an intense one this week. I do want to drop a little bit of a spoiler alert in that next week's, we've already decided what it is, and it's going to be a fucking good one. So
what is it?
Hang on, I'm going to mouth it over the Zoom. I'm going to mouth it. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. You're in for a wild ride.
It's going to be a little bit of a change in pace for that one. We are going to be going back to Shirley for some of that. So, you know, stay with us through both.
Shirley's telling the whole thing.
If you can't handle us at our cancel culture, you don't deserve us at our next episode, which is going to be about beep. Thank you so much for listening, all of you. We love and appreciate you and have a wonderful week. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Follow us on, if you're listening on Spotify, or subscribe if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or whatever. Leave us a 5-star review if you think we deserve it, which obviously we do. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. It's goodbye from us. Bye.
Bye.